This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Johnson.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. This is Rob Tionkson, a motorsports journalist based out of Austin, Texas, who's been covering the NASCAR beat since 2008. I'm so glad that you can join us for another action-packed hour of TPF Live. Welcome to episode 18 of TPF Live, our first podcast and radio show following a points-paying NASCAR Cup Series race this year, which is so super exciting and so awesome to do at last. Now, full disclosure that this show has been recorded following Sunday's 64th Daytona 500. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that was a dandy to watch and cover. This particular podcast episode will be a fun one because we're going to talk about the recent happenings in NASCAR in a somewhat different version of Podium Perspectives. I'll explain what that means in a little bit. And the full-length version of this week's Hot Seat interview featuring a returning special guest from episode number one, that will be a part of our show today. So I'm so glad that you are tuning in because I promise you folks, it's going to be a lot of fun to hear. Normally, I'd be introducing my co-host Nathan Solomon, but unfortunately, as of this recording, he's under the weather. So of course, the TPF team and I, we all hope that Nathan feels better in time for episode 19 of TPF Live. But never fear, you've got me here, Rob Tionkson, and I'm going to carry you folks through the show. And I've also got a good friend here joining me today, and she's a familiar guest who's been on twice already. I believe she was on episode number 4, and she was on episode number 16 a few weeks ago. So you should know who this is. And if you don't, well, I hope you girls and guys welcome in Jasmine Jazz Sharp here today. Welcome back, Jazz. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for inviting me for this spice-filled episode, I think. We got tons to cover. I am so excited to be here to talk about this weekend's events.
Yeah, it's going to be a great one for sure, just because, you know, Daytona, we finally can decompress from all the incredible action and kind of just take in all that happened, the highlights, the lows, and just a lot of the amazing memories that resulted from the 64th Daytona 500, and of course the accompanying races such as the Xfinity Series opener, which in more ways than one is going to be one of the more memorable ones that we're going to be talking about, not only on this show, but for many years to come. Now, today's show is going to be a very entertaining one because we're going to be chiming in with our thoughts about the 64th Daytona 500 that just wrapped up on Sunday evening. And of course, like I said, we're going to talk about those highlights that happened at Daytona and also preview the Wise Power 400 Auto Club Speedway, the first NASCAR race weekend at that 2-mile super speedway since 2020. And today we've got a returning special guest who's going to be in the hot seat. That, of course, would be Brianna O'Leary, who's a tire changer with Trackhouse Racing. She's going to be here with us today, and she's got a lot to talk about with NASCAR's diversity efforts and how she's preparing for her sixth season going over the wall. So I hope you all stay tuned for that and get to hear from Brianna again as she's been getting ready for this season. And of course, meaning she's getting used to those one lug nut style wheels for her pit stops, which is a total game changer to say the least. Now, before we begin our first segment, as I always say during our podcasts, if you're looking to get the latest diecast cars from Lionel NASCAR or from Greenlight Collectibles IndyCar, movie, and TV car collection, CircleBDiecast.com has it all for you right now. If you spend at least $20 or more on all in-stock items or pre-order items that will be shipping at the same time, use promo code TPF2022 to get free shipping. Again, that's promo code TPF2022 to get free shipping on all items that are in stock or any pre-order items that will ship at the same time for orders of $20 or more. Go to CircleBDiecast.com to get the latest diecast cars, collectibles, t-shirts, hats, anything to accessorize yourself as a true motorsports fan. Just be sure to tell Brent and his team that Rob Tionkson and Jazz Sharp sent you over by using promo code TPF2022 on CircleBDiecast.com. All right, folks, now that you've heard how this podcast is like, let's get to our first big segment of the day, Podium Perspectives. Well, folks, Sunday's 64th Daytona 500 proved to be quite an entertaining race, as the next-gen car formally made its points-paying race debut with three thrilling stages. Now, Martin Truex Jr. won the opening two stages and was making a great case to win his first Daytona 500 at last. But we saw plenty of action with Brad Keselowski driving in his debut points-paying race with RFK Racing in a rather aggressive, let's say, no-holds-barred racing approach. It may have not won him a lot of friends on the racetrack, but it certainly kept him towards the front of the field. And speaking of that, we saw 35 lead changes among 13 different drivers in a race that was slowed down by 7 caution periods. That may not sound like a lot, but when you think about what those 7 cautions entailed, one of those involved a loose wheel, which was certainly a troublesome situation for Kaz Grala and his Mighty Team Racing team efforts. And then, of course, we had another one, but not really for a loose tire, but a tire that fell off a wheel for Justin Haley and the Colic Racing number 31 team. And oh yeah, when it comes to Daytona Speed Weeks, we of course unfortunately get those onslaught of crashes that will take out a number of heavy hitting contenders. And speaking of those contenders, you know, folks like Kyle Larson, Kevin Harvick, Eric Jones, William Byron, Denny Hamlin, and Christopher Bell all were eliminated from contention because of wrecks. But we also saw a very great finish between Austin Cindric and Bubba Wallace, with Cindric edging out Wallace in dramatic fashion, with the winner, of course, having a great old time in victory lane, and the second place driver stewing over what could have been. Jazz, now that I pretty much set up what happened in the Daytona 500, how exciting was that race for you from your perspective, and what stood out to you the most?
Wow. Wow, you just laid a big one right there. My goodness. I have to say, Speed Weeks traditionally, in order to even get into such a huge prestigious event, there's qualifying events, there's, I wouldn't call them exactly mock races, but kind of where you set up half the field and so many people make it in and all that. And those two duels, that's what we call them and all that, kind of was an indication of what was going to happen. You speaking about Brad Keselowski, what a shock right there. Not only did he win one of the duels, but his teammate, Chris Buescher in the number 17, also won a duel. I think that was a really crazy setup, considering that we haven't seen Roush cars perform that well in quite some time. And to see Brad and Chris both push and make a lot of effort during the race as well, that was really interesting to see. I, however, was not a fan of Brad being Mr. Aggressive during the whole event. Kind of gave me, I don't know if you remember 2014 a lot, but Brad made some really big aggressive moves right during that too, and he didn't make a lot of allies during that too. So I'm hoping that this is just kind of a here I am statement at the beginning of the year, and I'm hoping that has decides to kind of cool down a little bit. You don't want everyone to be against you when you're a two-car organization that is basically rebranding and it's like a rebirth in a way. They're representing themselves to the rest of the field and all that. So
yeah, RFK Racing, that's an interesting situation over there with Chris Buescher and of course driver owner Brad Keselowski. Now, Chris Buescher, after winning the 2015 Xfinity Series Championship, I mean, he has that feather in his cap with the foggy win at Pocono in 2016 that got Front Row Motorsports and, of course, Buescher into the playoffs for the first time. But really, in his Cup career, there hasn't been a lot to talk about, not because he's not a good driver, but he's just been in a situation where bad luck has been happening, or he's been in equipment that really hasn't backed up what he could do in a race car. And as for Brad Keselowski, of course, he's been the man behind the number two car since 2011 until last year. And of course, he won an Xfinity Series Championship with Roger Penske, who, by the way, happy birthday to him on Sunday with that win in Daytona, which I'm sure Austin Cindric gave him the best birthday cake ever with that victory. But Keselowski, really, he's been one of the more aggressive drivers of his generation. And I think for him, just trying to get RFK Racing back to the front, you mentioned a good point. RFK Racing really hasn't been toward the front of the field, I would argue, in the last 10 years. I mean, that was during the time when they had Carl Edwards, they had Matt Kenseth around, and of course, Greg the Biff Biffle, who, by the way, made his return to NASCAR on Sunday. That's the last time I really can think of them as being this relevant powerhouse team. So I think Brad was just making a huge statement, maybe not in the greatest fashion, like you said. And you don't want to have a lot of enemies, particularly after Auto Club, Speedway, and of course, Las Vegas, because when we get to Phoenix, we know that's a track where paybacks can happen. And with that not being a title race in the spring, there can certainly be a lot of little bit of retribution during that race. So I think certainly Brad has to have a more calculated and methodical approach, but also try to get the most out of his car, which is always the job of every race car driver. I think for me, the biggest story for me with yesterday or Sunday's race, rather, and the Daytona 500, didn't have to be Bubba Wallace getting his runner-up finish, which, of course, we should probably expect that he's a really good super speedway racer.
Yeah.
I think to me, the biggest story was just the fact that Chase Elliott was the highest finishing Hendrick driver and highest finishing Chevrolet driver. Probably thinking at home, Rob, what are you thinking? I mean, Chase Elliott should be getting those top finishes for Chevrolet if he's going to be in Hendrick Motorsports' equipment. Well, highest finisher with a 10th place finish. That's pretty crazy. I mean, yes, Alex Bowman, William Byron, and Kyle Larson, they got wiped out by wrecks not of their own doing. Well, Larson probably of his own doing, but the latter two, not so much. And Elliott was involved in that little fracas on the front stretch by Larson and Eric Jones and Kevin Harvick, spun in that near the road course section of turn one, and yet got a top 10. You have to wonder, Jazz, if Larson and Elliott were not involved in wrecks with like 10 laps to go, do you think they had enough time to make a charge and attack and make an attack against those Fords and those Toyotas?
That's really hard to say there, Rob, because so my pick this week, because we do our picks and all that for who do we think is going to win. I picked Kurt Busch. The Toyotas also didn't have a lot of luck this weekend as well. And it makes me wonder, you bring up the Eric Jones, right? Eric Jones was doing great all day himself, and he's not even in the Hendrick camp. So I'm wondering if the cards were played differently and all that, and these wrecks played out differently and where they happened in the field, I'm thinking that the Chevys could have all come together and they could have made a push, and we could have seen possibly Larson or even Byron, somebody that we haven't really talked about this year that much in the Hendrick camp, get a win. I think it would have been possible, but maybe this is a foreshadowing, since we've been so used to Hendrick dominating the last couple of years in the championship and all that, of new things to come. Maybe this is a forewarning that, watch out, Mr. Hendrick, there's somebody else that's playing their cards this year, and it's not going to be you. So I don't know. I really don't know.
It's going to be really interesting, because I think it's kind of hard, like you said, to predict. And we do our predictions on Podium Preview, of course, on TPF. Chevrolet is an interesting situation because, of course, for so long, at least as long as I've been watching NASCAR, which has been since 1991, been covering it since 2008, like I've said on the top of the program, Hendrick Motorsports is a constant when it comes to Chevrolet. When you think of Toyota, it's Joe Gibbs Racing. When it comes to Ford, that's kind of been Team Penske's little playground, if you will. But Chevrolet, they've got a lot of new teams on around. I mean, Colleg Racing has made the full-time move to Cup Racing with the full-time number 31 car and that full-time trophy-hunting number 16 car. It's going to be pretty cool to see Hendrick Motorsports having some competition for a change, and maybe RCR, Colleg, Petty, GMS, or even anyone else out there can challenge the Hendrick Motorsports quartet and make things a little bit, as you said, spicy, if you will. I like that word. It's a little bit spicier, if you will, for the competition, just because the more parity there is, the more buzz there is. And when we talk about Best Season Ever, we want to see that kind of parity toward the front of the field. So I'm kind of hoping we see that at Auto Club, see that at Las Vegas and Phoenix. It's anyone's guess, but at least more in the driver's hand. And I'm sorry, Parker Kligerman, I had to use that phrase. I know that's an overly used phrase, but we always want to see the racing back in the driver's hand. So we're going to get to talking about Auto Club Speedway on the podcast version of our Podium Perspectives for the radio show, folks. Sorry, Not Really Sorry. You get the cool songs, but just be sure to check out our podcast later on this week, because I'm sure you're going to hear more about that in a sort of, you should check it out on Spotify and Apple podcast type of move. But let's move on to our second topic here. And of course, we talked about a lot about the Daytona 500, but we can't talk about the Daytona Speed Weeks this year without discussing what happened to Mike Snyder with his harrowing crash in Saturday evening's NASCAR Xfinity Series opener, Beef, It's What's for Dinner 300, which maybe for some of us, steak is what's for dinner for a lot of us this evening or tomorrow. But let's talk about what happened to Myatt. And then unfortunately, in that final lap, I mean, that was one of the most hair-raising and harrowing wrecks I've seen. And I mean, Daytona, unfortunately, has produced a lot of these scary, hold-your-breath type of crashes over the last few years. You can think about Kyle Larson in 2013. You can think about Austin Dillon in 2015. Of course, Ryan Newman with that really scary crash in the 2020 Daytona 500. And last year's Daytona 500, that last lap wreck with Joey Logano, Brad Keselowski, and Kyle Busch, that was just absolutely like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen here? But when you saw what happened to Mike Snyder on Saturday evening, just, I know we journalists are supposed to not really pull for anyone or anything like that, but I think all of us were in unison and hoping that Mike was okay. And thank goodness he was. When the camera panned in into his car and it took a little bit of time, you can see Mike moving around, obviously, in the cockpit of what's left of his battered number 31 car. And it just goes to show that these drivers are athletes, to say the least. And I'll share a little bit of what Mike said after the crash, courtesy of what Luis Torres, our photojournalist, who, by the way, congratulations to Luis and Jonathan on a job well done at Daytona. Jonathan Huff and Luis Torres, you guys brought it home, and we're so proud of you. Luis got this quote from Mike, where Mike said, "I got turned around to the side and was facing backwards. I was starting to see the racetrack, and I'm like, this is getting better as it goes. I think what happened is that the left rear started yawing towards the fence, and then the fence caught it. That's what really started tearing everything up. Then I got drugged into the grass, from what I can tell. But I am extremely blessed to be as okay as I am, and glad that Jordan Anderson Racing built such a safe race car. Man, I really wanted a top five finish, but I think I should be fine to race. It's just a matter of getting the opinions of the experts. But yeah, I think I should be fine." I can't say that if I was behind a race car cockpit like that, on behind the wheel, and going through a crash like that, that is a mentally tough thing to overcome. And I think there's a lot of bit of physical, like, obstacles to overcome as well, because I think Myatt walked away with a sore foot, which, that's understandable. He took a really hard series of hits, but that kind of crash, that was incredible, and a great testament, of course, to Daytona, to NASCAR, to JAR for building a race car that protected him. Yes, the car broke apart and Michael Jordan was freaking out over what happened, oh, understandably.
Yes.
Did you see that? Like, there's a picture of him where he's got his hands up in the air, and I'm sure it was more like, holy moly, like, this is happening right in front of me. With Bubba Wallace, I think he was taking photographs in the backstretch. I don't know if that was a photo hole. If it were, I don't think it was on Sunday, but that was crazy. Jazz, I mean, obviously we should be congratulating Austin Hill and RCR on that fine win for them, and AJ Allmendinger for a job well done to even be in that position and try to get that Daytona debacle out of the way. Unfortunately, he comes home with a runner-up finish in his case. With Mike Snyder, though, I mean, some of your friends are race car drivers. Obviously, I know a lot of them too. You know, when it comes to a crash like that, how do they put that out of their mind? I mean, that has to be easier said than done to say, just get over it. You'll be all right.
Well, I growing up racing myself, there was a couple of questionable wrecks. One of them, I ended up upside down in said catch fence with me dangling and looking down at said dirt track, wondering, oh, is this going to fall? Am I going to be here forever? But I think that kind of comes with the territory. When we as race car drivers decide that this is something that we want to do for the rest of our lives, that's kind of one of the things that we take. That's one of the risks that we take. We're willing to be inside of the cockpit of a car that goes well over speeds of 150 plus miles in an hour. And we, thank goodness, I have to give kudos to NASCAR, first of all, for engineering cars that are safe as they are nowadays. Giving kudos to the team for putting the car together and making sure that it was ready to go. I mean, I'm friends with people that work in those shops. They never want to have to test that stuff out. They never want to see that their work is working in that aspect. They want the car to make it back in one piece. But as a race car driver, we never want to wreck. That's the thing too. I have to emphasize, we don't want to wreck, but at the same time, we're willing to put our lives on the line because it's our passion. It's something that we love to do. When that wreck happened, watching it, like, I launched out of my seat. I had, my heart was up in my throat because, like, it reminded me, I don't remember if it was Newman's rookie year or it was his first, like, his second year, but there was a really gnarly wreck that happened, I believe, where it was similar, where it shredded, right? The axle of the car was gone. I mean, it, same thing. He walked out fine, perky, the legend. And I am so happy that he is able to walk and tell the tale. Same with Maya, like that. Ooh, that's just testament. And I'm so proud of all of us as a community being able to witness that, there was so much love that came out of the community, outpouring love and all that for him afterwards. And I can't wait to see him race next week. I can't wait. Like, I hope he gets cleared. I know he did have some foot issues. His foot was sore. I hope he gets cleared for next week and all that. But I know he's ready. He's fired up. He's ready to do what he's got to do to take a trophy home. So
he's a young little whippersnapper, to say the least. And yes, I did say whippersnapper on TPF Live. So folks at home, if you're keeping track of some words that you can use for your English classes and on St. Bonaventure campus, you can thank me for that and Jazz for inspiring me with such words from the Sadlier Oxford Dictionary.
Whippersnapper is a good one.
It should be. I'm going to tell Maya that when I talk to him too, then on his next Slaying It with Mike Snyder segment, which, oh yes, by the way, that should be coming up later this week on our possibly revamped and newly looking TPF website. Ooh. Which right now we're kind of under construction as a press time. So if you're kind of checking out the website and wondering what's going on, we're doing some back end work, going to the next gen, if you will. Yes. Thank you for the sound effects right there, Jess. Ooh. Oh my goodness. It is a woo kind of moment. So never fear, ladies and gentlemen. We're as of this recording, TPF is just getting a little maintenance work, but we're going to be back up and going. And I can't wait to have you folks read Myatt Snyder's journal. If you tuned into last week's podcast, well, you got to hear a little bit of what he said. And if you didn't, what the heck are you doing? Go to Spotify.
You
can rewatch
it. It's on Spotify. You got the tools. Just
right.
Do it.
Yes, exactly. Don't make me have Shia LaBeouf come over here and tell us to let's do it. But yes, good to see Mike Snyder be okay and to get a little serious here. I can see why Bob Jenkins, and God rest his soul, why Bob Jenkins said that he had a hard time trying to be friends with race car drivers. And for a long time, I didn't understand that because I was thinking, well, inevitably you'll form friendships with drivers, but you can still be impartial about them. You don't have to praise them. You can critique them constructively during a race or in your articles. But when you're friends with a driver or you know them well, and you see them in a crash like that, it does bring back the human element. And I think that's the one thing I try to relay on this show and on my articles is that, you know, every woman and man, every person in the garage area or in those cockpits, they're all human beings. If they didn't sign your autograph, don't take any offense. They're just probably having a bad day. You can have a bad day too. And I'm sure when you come out of work, you don't want to sign autographs, take selfies with people. I mean, my regular day job, I'm pretty sure I don't want to sign autographs or talk about how my day went. I just want to think about what's going forward rather than reflecting on what was. But nevertheless, I'm glad that Myatt's okay. We're all looking forward to seeing him hopefully back at Fontana for what should be an amazing race. So for you folks listening to us on the podcast, we've got one more topic to cover. And of course, that would be talking about the return of the Mac. I mean, the return of Auto Club Speedway. Yes, that was intentional. Of course, I have to do that. I do that, a lot of dad jokes on this show. But being naturally the dad of NASCAR journalists, based on my young age, which I will not disclose, not for HIPAA reasons, I promise.
Ooh.
Anyway, singers all around. I know. That's not to anyone at all, I promise. In any event, we're going to talk about Fontana, that wonderful 2-mile super speedway that for a while we thought was going to be changed into a short track. And of course, COVID-19 happened. And as with the pandemic, plans changed. And last year, we didn't get to see race at Fontana. I mean, we got to see a bunch of them on the sim racing circuit. And I think one of the last sim races I watched last year was when Bob Jenkins was covering a race. I forget what series it was, because there's so many of them these days, which is cool. It's kind of like the Beanie Babies craze to me at this point. But anyways, Fontana, great 2-mile racetrack, been around since 1997, and there's no better 25th anniversary present to that track than having NASCAR Xfinity and NASCAR Cup Series drivers and teams back at that mammoth speedway. Now, at least on the Cup side of things, let's talk about that, because the last time we were all there, at least the Cup Series was there, Kyle Larson and Denny Hamlin, two good buddies, they kind of like hit each other, and one had a good finish, and the other one was just limping around and looked like a lost DoorDash driver or Uber driver trying to find your apartment with McDonald's and those McNuggets getting cold. I know, I've been through that before.
Struggles are real.
Yeah, adulting is a great situation, my friends. And then, of course, there was that other driver who drove the number 88 car, and he drove that car onto victory lane. And yes, when I saw that race and I covered it for NASCAR Pole Position, I did reference Bill Belichick, and I said it was on to Cincinnati because Alex Bowman won in that race. And then, boom, COVID-19 happened. And yes, I think that was probably the origin of people making this crazy, silly theory that anytime Alex Bowman wins, something bad happens. And is there credence to that? Is it kind of like saying Avril Lavigne has been replaced by, I forget that woman's name, or is it like saying Paul McCartney is dead after some mysterious car accident in 1965 because his teeth were chipped? I don't know, folks. You tell me. Tweet to me at Rob Tionx and tweet to Jazz or at the Podium Finish. Tell us what you think about that. But Alex is a good friend to TPF, and me, we're probably going to have to hear from him at some point with a potential project that we have in the works. But anyways,
ooh.
Fontana, yeah, spoiler alert. Woohoo. That's why we have this behind Spotify and Apple Podcasts. But Fontana, I'm really looking forward to this particular race just because it's one of the better super speedway races all year round, and it doesn't involve steep banking. Those corners are so flat, but they're very wide, and you'll see drivers on the apron below the white line, not above the yellow line. Sorry, Taylor Kitchen. I'm kidding, of course. And you'll get to see a lot of these drivers' tires wearing out just because that track surface is so old. It was just before Bill Clinton made that great speech that I can recite, but I will not, because no politics on this show. Just like I don't want to have no religion in my video games. But let's just get to it. I mean, Fontana is going to be it's going to be such a fun race. Oh boy. Oh boy. Where have we gone with this part? This is almost starting into Inside NASCAR with Michael Waltrip, Johnny Benson, and Ken Schrader. We don't even have any of those.
Track? Dang it.
I'll turn into Alan Bestwick here. I'm going to try to get control of the show back. But anyways, the defending race winner, of course, and not because he's trying to get rid of the races at Fontana, of course, is Alex Bowman. Alex Bowman really needs a good run. I don't know what happened. Is it because he changed his car to a champagne-colored number 48 car and the whole world just detests the fact he changed it because he hasn't had any good luck? Can he have a little good luck on Sunday? We'll see. And Kyle Larson, I'm not too worried about him wrecking in the Daytona 500 because he's got 35 other races to pretty much just win every other one and probably will win like 7 or 8 races. Yes, that's a prediction right there. But I've talked too much about it. Jazz, tell me what you think about Fontana. I mean, this is sort of an unfiltered topic, so you tell me what you think.
Fontana, to me, is like the California edition of Michigan. If you look at the track layout, they're very, very, actually a little bit too similar, because like when I was there the last time back in 2017, I thought I magically appeared in Michigan for some reason when I got there. I was really confused, but it is some great racing. It is an incredible place. Of course, the last time I was there, Brandon Jones was with RCR, so that tells you how long ago that was. Ooh. I wouldn't mind if Bowman won. He's not going to take the track away. He's not going to take your races away. I mean, that is the inside joke, because I think this has happened, what, 2-3 times now? Kentucky, I think, was one, for example. Chicago Speedway. Yeah, Chicago, rest in peace. We love you.
Yeah, we love it.
But I think not just for him, but for Byron too. If we're looking at it for the Hendrick side of the camp, yes, I would like both of them to have some luck. I mean, even Mr. Gordon himself, Googie Gordon, as I called him growing up, Jeff really wants all four drivers to run the show over there at Hendrick. I mean, congratulations, by the way, to Chase for his contract extension. I know that's kind of a side tab pull right there, but I mean, he really wants his drivers to perform and do great. And I really would like that with all four of them. I know a lot of people joke about Bowman, of course, stealing literal tracks away from us in races, but he has talent. I mean, he's proven that. I mean, look what he did last year to Denny Hamlin. He got a good old grandfather clock out of that. Denny was not happy, but I mean, it proved. And he wasn't even in the playoff. That's the thing, too. This guy won in a non-playoff related race because he was already knocked out at that point. I think he has potential. I think something could happen. But as we spoke earlier, for those who have been listening in, we were talking about how, like, the other Chevys, I would love to see Eric Jones win. Let me tell you about that Jones boy. Or what about his teammate, Ty Dillon? Ever since GMS and Richard Petty teamed up together, they actually have done really good. I'm actually surprised by their performance. You can tell that the extra funding and teamwork over at those shops has really come into fruition. What about Daniel Suarez? I mean, Trackhouse Racing? I want to see something spicy. I know I brought that up earlier. That's a lingo word. I want to see something good. I want to see the underdog get it. I mean, last year when McDowell won it, so excited for him winning the Daytona 500. I want to see more stories like that this year with this next gen car. I think with everybody having more of an even playing field with how those cars are made and all that, I think we're going to see some more spicy events, some more unpredicted events happen. I hope you feel the same way. I mean, if you don't, that's cool, but I'm excited. I'm really excited to see what happens over in the magical land of California this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, tell us how you really feel. I don't think you quite conveyed that enough about the possibility. I'm cute. It's so spicy. I think you know, because we're recording this on Monday evening, we're probably just really hungry at this point. So we should probably get sponsored by a food product or a food delivery service. DoorDash,
hey, we're calling for you. Pizza rolls, man. Pizza rolls. Good to go snack. Justina, yeah, you listening? Get some pizza rolls, you know?
And Bell and Evans, I'm calling for you with your ethically raised chicken nuggets and chicken tenders. Come on. Join the show. I will gladly do a product placement to show what great chicken Bell and Evans has, but let's get back to the topic before I think about dinner, because I'm getting hungry here. Oh, goodness gracious. I think you nailed it about what makes all of us so excited, whether you're a fan or a journalist. What makes everyone so excited about the next-gen car? Going to a track like Fontana, which we've dearly missed. Unfortunately, never got to see that final Gen 6 race with it in proper fashion. But, you know, we're going to have 670 horsepower engines in these next-gen cars, which I think should perform just as well, maybe a little better because they have a little bit more horsepower in them. Because if I'm not mistaken, I think the 2020 race featured that lower horsepower count and high downforce package.
Yeah.
I think it did. And I think a lot of folks were like, well, this is kind of a neutered version of the race. It's kind of like getting coffee, but decaf, which I don't know what that means. So if you have any thoughts on that, folks, again, tweet to me because I don't drink coffee. But anyway, I think with the higher horsepower pack count and just the fact these next-gen cars bring in the likes of a Daniel Suarez, a Ross Chastain, Eric Jones, as you've mentioned, into the picture, it's just cool because we're going to see a lot of frantic action, I think. And we do get a little bit of practice this weekend, maybe not the full practice like we saw at Daytona with all those sessions and all those different agendas. This 15-minute session prior to qualifying is really going to make these drivers and teams go, are we just going to treat this as a warm-up session for our qualifying setup, or are we going to sacrifice speed and go for handling come Sunday afternoon? That's going to be the great dilemma that we'll see at these speedway races this year that I'm looking forward to seeing. And ultimately, I think it's going to lead to a really amazing race. Alex Bowman probably is a good pick, and I would have him on a fantasy racing lineup, but just thinking without even seeing qualifying in practice, because I don't have the great powers of Karnak from the late Johnny Carson, I'm going to say that Kyle Larson is probably my pick. Wow, not a total spoiler that I'm going with a Hendrick car at a super speeder race like this. But I let me tell you why I'm going with the number five team. Because Kyle Larson is the kind of guy who can sweep these racetracks. I mean, I saw that June race at Michigan in 2017 when he drove the Cars 3 paint scheme. He wasn't exactly dominating that race. That belonged to Martin Truex Jr., and I think Eric Jones was in the front of the field as well. This wasn't the race, of course, where Eric Jones kind of got in a situation where Larson just squeezed through the middle and won it on a restart. This was a case where Larson was like so many cars behind and Chase Elliott was a part of that picture. And Larson was able to just crash his way through the front of the field when it really mattered. I'm kind of looking for the same thing too on Sunday. I don't think he's going to lights out dominate this race because you mentioned it. There's a lot of parity this year. Which a lot of folks at home are probably saying, what's Rob and Jazz talking about? They're just probably basing it off the Daytona. Well, Jazz knows a lot about NASCAR. She's been to quite a few races, and I think I'm pretty qualified myself. I will not have to display those credentials or discuss them on the air because I am confident in who I am. But yeah, I think it's going to be a great race, but if I have to be like, all right, don't pick Hendrick, let us go and be a little different here. If Austin Cindric can win the Daytona 500, let's go with Harrison Burton and bringing the Wood Brothers number 21 team back to victory lane and getting their 100th cup race victory, which I think everyone would be okay with that.
That would be.
We've been waiting for that moment since 2017. Ryan Blaney teased a lot of folks with those close calls after his Pocono win, which to me, still one of those seminal moments of NASCAR. Mm-hmm. Just to see him beat Kevin Harvick at Pocono, I was like, whoa, this is a generation shift that we're seeing. I hope we see that again on Sunday and with Mr. Harrison Burton getting it done and making this rookie battle even more spicier. Yes, I use the word spicier.
On your point with that, I have to say, thank goodness he's safe too. That man. Talking about crazy crashes, looking back at the Daytona 500, he flippy-flopped. And by flippy-floppy, his car kind of recreated what Brennan Gaughan's car did a couple years back at Talladega. It flipped. So thank goodness he's okay. But can we – you bring up rookies, dude. I never thought that Austin was going to win the opening race of the season. A rookie, like – I brought that up with some of my friends. I'm like, that's weird seeing the two car with rookie stripes. The last time that we saw the two car with rookie stripes was, I don't think we have. Because
not in our generation.
Not in our generation, exactly. So that's monumental right there. Fontana, it's like opening a can of worms at this point. Who's going to do it? And I know we didn't talk about like the other makes, but we do have other teams that are driving Ford cars that to look at. I'm hoping that Stuart Haas, I feel kind of bad for them because, like, we really haven't brought them up that much, but I'm hoping that they do better this year. I mean, Rick Ware as well. Rick Ware, the underdogs because they are doing that partnership engine program with Stuart Haas. So they actually looked really good. Reagan, Mr. David Reagan, who was driving with them in the 15 during the Daytona 500, I believe he got an eighth place finish.
Please so.
Yeah, and then Cody got a top 20 finish, which for them, Rick Ware, that's pretty good. So that's kind of a spoiler. What if we get somebody like Rick Ware to somehow, you know, wiggle their way up to the front? I mean, I'm just saying, like you said, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that just because Cody Ware, I'm expecting big things from him. I don't mean like he's going to win 20 races, get to the playoffs. And I think he's a great kid. And I can say kid because he's 10 years younger than me. Anyone who's in the 90s is a kid. But, you know, Cody Ware is certainly the benchmark for Rick Ware Racing because David Reagan's one of those one and off drivers for them this year. But that was a great feat to see him do so well in the number 15 car. And seeing the number 15 car in general doing so well in a cup race, boy, that brings me back to being a kid and seeing the Budmore cars doing so well. Yeah. When they used to have Jeffrey Bodine, Morgan Shepherd back in those days, and Lake Speed, good old Lake Speed.
And oh, Lake.
Yeah. Quality Care Ford. And of course, Dick, the late Dick Trickle, I think he was called White Thunder. He used to drive that number 15 car back in the day. Oh, goodness. And then, yeah, I mean, we've talked about the parody, wanting to see more Chevrolets do well. We want to see that too with the Ford teams, just because it's always been the Team Penske situation. And, you know, the RFK Racing, who I considered the banner Ford team until Penske switched over the Ford in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've kind of just, you know, they've just been
either
there.
Way. They've just, it's weird.
They've just existed.
It's, yeah.
And I don't mean that in a kind of metaphysical kind of like existentialist way. And we'd have to think really deep and hard because I don't want anyone to do that on TPF Live. That would be interesting. But we want to see Rick Ware do well. And maybe that means, you know, if they're doing really well, that Ford has another pipeline and they don't have to keep losing these talents to other manufacturers down the road. So Fontana, wow. When we talk about Fontana, it was certainly a Pandora's box of different topics, but it all brings it back to Fontana. Oh man. In being a sort of clone of Michigan. Hey, you know, people may not have the most fond memories right now of Michigan, but get off its back, people. I think it's one of the best tracks around. And I think Fontana is just right up there too. So looking forward to seeing that on Sunday. And of course, if you're going to watch that race on Sunday, you can catch that on the Mothership Fox Network at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Central. And of course, if my calculations are correct, which I hope it is, I believe that would mean 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. So you West Coasters, don't complain. You should be thrilled that you could even see the race that early, while the rest of us fools have to deal with the later race time. And then we're not going to make that a podium perspective topic right now, because if we did, that's a whole show go all together.
Back in my day, I had miles to go see the race.
We are not going to do that because, the outrage we would get on this show. Maybe we'll get some engagement about that, but we're not going to do that right now because we're here to have some fun. And I hope all you folks at home and all you folks on campus who checked us out on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, hope you enjoyed that. And you can tune into the Podium Finish Live to hear more thoughts like that. And once the TPF website is back up and running from our refit, well, you'll see a lot of that content coming up. So we've got even more fun coming up because we're heading into the hot seat. Now, today's Hot Seat interview features one of our first guests when we rebooted TPF Live last year, because we've got Brianna O'Leary here, and she's fresh from her first race weekend of 2022. Heading into her sixth season, Brianna's story, as mentioned in our first episode, is quite unique. She was originally a softball player for Alcorn State University, and I would say it's safe to say that her future originally did not involve NASCAR. because she was pursuing her master's at that school before a fateful day brought Phil Horton, a pit crew coach with a NASCAR driver diversity program, to her campus, and he was recruiting college athletes to become new pit crew talent in NASCAR. Well, suffice to say, Brianna worked really hard at her craft, and she proved her worth in those rigorous combines before she earned a spot in 2016. Years later, and many pit stops later, from those short track races in ARCA, the Truck Series, Xfinity Series, and of course, making a bit of herstory at Daytona in 2019, she's proven herself not only as one of the few women who go over the wall in NASCAR, but she's a bona fide, genuinely respected, talented pit crew personnel with Trackhouse Racing. Before we get into this, I know, Jazz, like, again, we talked about how you are well connected to the world of NASCAR. I'm not so sure how much you know about Brianna, but, you know, thinking how there's a great female tire changer, and not only that, a great tire changer altogether in NASCAR, who is as open and very interactive as she is, you know, how pivotal is that for NASCAR's growth, not only with new fans, but also with the diversity efforts?
Well, I actually got to hang out with Brie back last year when I went to Michigan, actually.
Oh, cool.
Kudos. I got to say thanks to Rick Ware and NBC and Tommy Joe, like a bunch of people over there. But we spent the cup race with the Rick Ware guys, and that's when she was working with, I think it was Garrett Smithley's pit that day, that crew. Can't remember, one of the Rick Ware teams. And we had a couple of people with us that had never been to a NASCAR race before. Well, Brie and the rest of the crew members were like little kids at a candy shop. They were very hands-on. They were like teaching us how, for example, they gassed the car. They let us all touch the gas cans and all that, of course, under the supervision of the NASCAR officials, who thought it was pretty cool too. They were super hands-on, and whenever there was like a restart or something and there were kids in the area, they would make sure that the kids could get in the pit box and get up close and personal, so then the kids could see as close as possible the restarts. And it's a breath of fresh air. I understand with the higher caliber teams like Penske and Hendrick, I get it, where they have to be professional and they're very, you know, very close minded when it comes to things, because they want the results, they want the numbers. But for these individuals who aren't even getting paid extra to take that time out to be able to go one-on-one with us with that, it's something that for people that have not been to an event like that before, or maybe have dilly-dallied in it bit by bit, you know, stuck the finger in the pie. We don't want people doing that, of course. It's not a good thing. But I'm just saying, have gotten just a little hint of what's there. It's an eye-opening event. And for me personally, I think the pit crew people make it and break it. Think about it. When a driver parks into their pit stall to get their service and all that, who are they relying on to get a reliable service done and all that and get back out to the front of the field? It's the pit crew. So Brie is such a sweetheart. She is full of talent. She is hilarious. I love her humor. It really, if somebody's not having a good day, she knows how to lift their spirits up and all that. And you want that with a pit crew. A pit crew is kind of like a family in a way, a discombobulated family, because you're working through some of the hardest weather conditions and God knows how many layers of gear and all that for some of them. I mean, I couldn't imagine it. I want to imagine it, but they pull it off so effortlessly. So kudos to her and the others that do that every single week.
You're here for that, and I think she does an amazing job being a NASCAR ambassador, which I think if she heard that terminology being called a NASCAR ambassador, it would probably humble her a ton, but she really is, because I think she brought a lot of new fans into the sport, and her TikToks are hilarious. And you're right. I mean, you have to have a good sense of humor. You have to be able to lift the men and women around you when you had a bad pit stop or the team's not having a good race. You have to have that spark plug on the team, and that's what Brianna is. And you're going to hear a little bit of that right now, because when you hear from Brianna, as we catch up with her here today in the hot seat. So Brianna, take it away. Let's hear your thoughts. Brianna, thank you for taking the time this evening to talk to me for the Podium Finish and the Podium Finish Live. Now, we've done many interviews in the past, which I'm really appreciative about, but here's something I've never really asked you about. You know, how do you handle the ups and downs of NASCAR? not only with overcoming the difficult times, like a tough pit stop, or, you know, 2 years ago when we were coming back from the COVID pandemic pause, to, you know, preparing for these different team assignments that you go through during the year?
I would say one of my biggest things to just to get through it all is I just have to tell myself, like, take it one day at a time. I can't, like, overwhelm myself with what happened yesterday, and I can't overwhelm myself with the thought of what might happen tomorrow. I have to, like, focus on today, and I have to do well today in every aspect of life. And I think that's helped me get through NASCAR, because through the trials and tribulations of NASCAR, because you know how quickly things can change in the sport. And you know, it's like literally your head's constantly on a swivel. You're like, okay, what are we doing? What are we doing? And so I've learned to just focus on the day and not just, you know, ruin my day thinking about tomorrow or thinking about the mistake I made yesterday or thinking about, oh my God, sort of in my next race, I mess up or, you know, something like that. So just one day at a time is the big thing.
You know, not to kind of poke fun at your age, because you hit a milestone age last year, but how much of that do you suppose getting older helps with that? Because I'm sure when you were a little bit younger and kind of getting into the sport, you know, maybe things are felt a little bit more critical. But now that you know your place, you're with the Trackhouse Racing organization with their affiliates, to have this self-comfort in yourself that, you know, everything's going to be okay.
I think I've tried to, I wouldn't say I've been calm, cool and collected always, but I'm pretty like relaxed most of my life anyway. But I just think, yeah, I'm obviously like, now that I'm on year six, just like, and seeing that, okay, you know what, everything so far has been okay, whether it was maybe not okay at the time. Because when I first started, it was a lot of like, what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this now when, you know, a month from now, this is like, it might not work out. And then I just pushed through it like day by day. That's when I think maybe I decided in this sport, I'm going to take it day by day, because that's all you can do, literally. So I just definitely think maybe the experience as well makes you, it just allows you to be relaxed. You get to be comfortable. Everything's not brand new anymore. And I think that that comes with it. And that's obviously a very good feeling to have.
Absolutely. Cause I mean, when you know your place, you know that you have to just take it at a little bit of a slower pace versus where I think when we're younger, we're just so, I don't want to say trained, but it's just within us at a younger age to just expect everything to happen all at once, where, you know, you get more experience, whether it's through age or just being there, like you said, for 6 years, that you just eventually just say, you know what, why am I overwhelming myself? Let's just get through today. Let's get through this week and then we'll figure it out, because maybe it's not as bad as I'm thinking. So it sounds like to me a little bit of your experience and your growth is not just getting physically more fit and getting these opportunities, but maybe even conditioning your mindset, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would definitely say most of it is mental. Because you can train your body, you can do rep and rep and rep and get it down, muscle memory, but to just kind of like fight with your own mind, I think that will always be the biggest challenge in anything, really.
It's so true, because I think at the end of the day, we're our own worst critics, but we also have to strive to be our own best advocates as well, just because, you know, you could have this extremely great day, race weekend or a day, and nothing seems like it go wrong, and then you could have a really tough time and you're just like questioning everything. But it sounds like you reached a point in your career and professional life that everything is starting to hit the right directions. And I would say also too, you know, you've been enjoying some incredible opportunities throughout these last 6 years as a tire changer in NASCAR. You know, you were on GMA, on ABC, as we've discussed in previous interviews. And, you know, you get to share stories about your career with us and other outlets and publications. When that happens, you know, how humbling is it to share your experiences in NASCAR with others, whether those audience members or readers love NASCAR or just happen to, you know, happenstance upon your story?
I would honestly honestly say, like, getting to share my story and be an inspiration has probably been the most rewarding part of all of this. And I could say this too many times, but this will always be my answer, because when I came into this thing, it was just like an opportunity for me, and an opportunity for me to be competitive, and an opportunity for me to try something new. And that's how I looked at it. And it wasn't until, you know, a year in or so, or right before getting ready for our first season, that it was coming to light, like, oh, you are doing something kind of special and kind of cool. And people were letting me know, like, hey, keep it up. Like, I get to go tell my daughter that, yes, you can do this. I could tell my granddaughter, look at this, look at something you can do. Like, and it's so, yes, to get to go and share my story over and over is very humbling and rewarding. And I just really, like, appreciate you and everybody else that allows me to tell my story and that shares my story, because if it can just inspire one person to be like, you know what, I, whatever they want to do, whether it's be president of the United States or, you know, go be a teacher, like, just work hard and go do it. You know, it's been pretty cool to just feel that impact and know that people are looking up to me.
Well, you own that energy and your story, and I can speak from personal experience, you know, for the, you know, to tell the audience members about this. I think you also inspired me to be an excellent journalist. Well, hopefully I'm an excellent journalist, but to be a good human, thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, to be a good human being at the end of the day, I mean, being on social media, I think there's a lot of negativity from there. And just getting older, maybe I'm just more cognizant of what's the world around me, but, you know, I just love how, you know, lighthearted you are. I don't want to say goofy, because it kind of gives a connotation like you don't take things too seriously. I've seen you take things seriously, but, you know, talking about social media a little bit, you know, how daunting or how easy is it to showcase a little bit of who you are to people who follow racing or just, again, come across you on social media, because, you know, you're just this intriguing celebrity and athlete, not only on Instagram, but, you know, TikTok, because you are, you have run this gauntlet down, and you've done it so well.
I think maybe I think I use social media as an opportunity to show, you know, my life, and I hope it comes across as genuine, and that is the true me, and I'm not like trying to be somebody I'm not. And I don't know. I don't know that it's a daunting experience for me. Sometimes I'm like, maybe like on Twitter, I'm like, oh, I probably shouldn't tweet that. You know, it makes me more mindful, which is probably a good thing, right? I mean, yeah. So social media, I try to have fun with it, and I try to not take it so seriously, because it's just like a cool way to reach people and a cool way to allow people to see inside your life. So.
Well, see, that's what I thought social media was for. And I try to keep it light like you. Although, you know, I'm amazed how, as busy as you are, you still, I don't know if you just are really good at planning your content, or, you know, you're able to just manage your day in a way that you can still post it on there. You know, I work full time at an office job. I'm going to grad school full time. And oh, yeah, I'm running my own outlet full time. And I wish I had that energy to, you know, be on TikTok and do the cool things or funny things you do, or Instagram stuff, because I feel like that's a great way to connect with folks. So I think you just do it so well. And yeah, you do inspire a lot of folks, just to let you know. And that's why we, you know, people like me and, you know, outlets out there really love to talk about you and cover your story, to say the least. Now, to kind of bring it to the Asphalt Arena once more, you know, we've talked about this on your prior podcast appearance, but of course NASCAR Cup pit crews are adjusting to the new one lug nut style wheels for this year, and, you know, I know you've practiced with it before, but how much of a game changer is it for tire changers like you to adjust to this after years of doing the five lug nut styled wheels, at least in the Cup Series side of things?
I would say it was like one of those things when they first announced it, we were kind of like, is this a joke? Are we really doing this? You know, yeah. It was kind of like, one of those like hesitant to change things. So when we went from like 6 men over the wall to 5 men over the wall, that was a big change. And that was one that we're like, you know, and then, so that's how I kind of try to look at the single lug. Like, you know what, we adjusted so well and almost seamlessly to going from 6 crew members over the wall to 5 that, you know, this isn't going to be any different. We're going to face our challenges with it. We're going to try this and try that and try this and try this until we figure out what works for us. And then soon enough, it'll feel like, you know, what we've been doing, we'll be comfortable with it. And I just was like, it's happening. There's nothing we can do. Let's do it. Let's embrace it. And so it is different. It's very different. You know, it's changed some of our choreography. It's even changed some things on how we approach the car, you know, how we hold the gun. Obviously, it's a lot bigger now. And you just try different things and try different things until you figure out what, you know, works best. And so, I don't know. I love that I still get to change Xfinity and trucks. I love that I still get to do the 5 lug because that's, you know, what it's always been. And so, you know, I guess maybe we get the best of both worlds for now and have fun.
Yeah. No, I remember what you were saying on the prior TPF podcast. You're like, I'm going to miss the pew, 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 pew sound.
Yeah.
of the air guns. But I have to admit, I love the one lug nut style sound just because it sounds kind of like taking your car to the shop almost.
You know, almost exactly like that. Yeah.
In that kind of way, you know, I feel like that's going to bring back the car culture to the Cup Series side of things, just because I feel like younger audiences and younger folks they follow the sport, obviously, for the drivers and hopefully for, you know, great stories like you. But I feel like what's lost in all of that is the cars, which good thing they don't have feelings because otherwise they feel pretty much.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing how it unfolds in person just because just watching it on the tube, it doesn't give me the same excitement for sure. Now, I always enjoy asking you questions about music. So in this case here, you know, if you had a quintessential theme song that describes you to a T, what song would that be?
Oh my gosh, you always ask these hard questions. It's hard because, like, most of the songs I listen to are like cheesy, corny, like country love songs. And I love it. And like happy love songs. And the occasional like heartbreak, like getting your feeling songs. And I don't have like a love of my life at the moment. So I don't even relate to these songs. So I don't know that. I would like literally have to like put some thought into this. I'd have to go look at my playlist. Like, man, what would be my theme song right now? Probably a Taylor Swift song. I love Taylor Swift.
Yes, I was about to say you are definitely a Tay Tay fan. So
yes.
I was gonna say, I would think for me though, you're more of the Tay Tay from 2012, that era. But I can't figure, I don't know if you're more of the You Belong to Me era or Bad Blood or what's the other song? I don't know.
I'm here for them all though, so.
Well, same with my oldest sister. I guess I have a fond spot now for Taylor Swift, so that's what it is.
Good.
Yeah, I hope so. Just to get some brownie points here, you know. What has to be the most unusual fan experience you've had so far at the track? Because I'm sure, you know, a lot of folks ask to take a selfie with you or a lug nut or whatnot, but surely you've had some unique NASCAR-only experiences.
I don't know if it's a weird experience, but I probably will never forget it. I was getting our tires, and you know, our tires are stacked in 4 and we throw the tire part under it and pick it up and wheel it down the road.
Yeah.
And gosh, I can't remember where we're at, but I was pushing the empty cart back and I got to my stack of tires and I was about to, you know, put the tires on it. And this couple walks up to me and she was like, "My husband doesn't think you can do that. Can we watch you do that?" And I was like, okay, no pressure. So they just stood there and watched me like scoop the stack of tires up and, you know, tilt the cart backwards and roll away with it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was like, oh.
Okay, first of all, why would anyone have the audacity to question if you could do that? Because obviously, if you've been named and you were part of a pit crew, you're surely not there to be a mannequin. You really can't do this. So, I mean, that seems pretty out of left field for that couple to do.
I think the lady, she was my supporter and the husband was the doubter. So, okay, here we go. Well, I got to get it anyway, so I guess you're here for the show.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, if you want to see how Pit Crew 101 is like, just watch you for a race, and you will see that us men can probably get destroyed by you easily.
Yeah, so that was probably that's one of the most memorable, that's for sure.
Well, I won't name the track just because we don't want to hate on tracks, but I think I have a good idea where this might have happened, if I had to make a guess off the record, to say the least.
I can like picture the track in my head, but I cannot remember for the life of me what track it was. But as soon as I go back, I'll remember and I'll be like, oh, this was the one.
Yeah, I'm gonna say probably after this interview you'll be like, I know what the track was, and I'll be like,
yeah.
Oh, I could have put this in the interview, but that's okay. we love all the tracks in NASCAR for everyone's sake. So just how it is.
Yeah.
Well, when you had, yeah, go ahead.
Just kidding. I won't say which ones I don't like right now.
Well, we'll keep that off the record for say the least, but it's all good. When you've had to describe NASCAR to family and friends, you know, including those outside of the sport, you know, obviously you and I, we correspond and talk every day almost, but what are some of the words you use to describe the ambiance and dynamics of NASCAR, particularly at the racetrack?
First words, loud.
Yep.
Honestly, I was a big fan of like the one day shows because there wasn't other cars out practicing and it was just quiet, you know. Yeah, I would definitely just kind of, that's like my first thing is it's loud, but the energy, especially like you maybe LA Daytona or Charlotte or maybe Talladega, like the buzz, especially when the fans get to be there, that the buzz and the excitement is just like, you can feel the energy and it's really, really kind of a cool thing to be a part of. It just kind of, you just can walk through the infield and walk through the garage and feel it and be excited. And just, it's just like, makes you like, oh, this is a really cool thing that I get to be a part of. And that's kind of, you know, what being at the racetrack most days feels like for me.
I'd be glad I didn't ask about how rain delays work out, because you and I can attest just how fun those moments are.
Yeah. Woo.
Well, before we wrap up this latest podcast, again, we want to wish Nathan well. Hope he gets better so he can be back for episode number 19. The last episode. I know. Come on, Solly. It's the last episode of TPF Live being a teenager, because once it hits 20, I can't tell it what rules to do anymore. It's going to rebel against me all at once. But with that, I mean, this was a really fun show. I had a great time with you, Jazz, as always. You know, this season's going to have a lot of potential for being one of the best, I think, around. And yes, I am saying that after one race, and I'm not overreacting. I think I'm pretty accurate about this. So, I mean, we got Fontana coming up, this West Coast swing. Feifel goes west, of course, again with NASCAR. That reminds me, you know, let's kind of end the show with a random topic. Why hasn't NASCAR adapted Feifel Goes West or whatever the heck? What is that movie called with that little mouse going to the west?
I am so bad with movies.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Well, I guess I dated you on that one because, oh, that was a good old movie about the West Coast and the little mouse with a cowboy hat and a song that I promise you, if you ever hear it, it will make you cry. I don't care how moody you feel. There's a song in the original Feifel movie that will hit you in the feels, and I will never play it on our show because I don't want to cry on the show unless I, you know, won $1 million or something, but that's another topic for another time. But yeah, I guess we're going to have to end the show, because if we keep talking, this will be the longest ever podcast ever that people will actually enjoy for once on Spotify. Yes, I said that. And I said that with confidence. But Jazz, thank you so much for joining me today. It was such a fun time with you. You pretty much have earned a seat. Nathan's lost his seat. No, I'm kidding. Nathan will
have...
I'm kidding. Nathan's got a seat. But you're always more than welcome to join us. And I'm sure there may be a time that I may not be able to host a show. So there's always a good chance. Oh, well, be fine. I'll be here. But you're always more than welcome, as I always say. And I hope that we do get to catch up at a race in person, because that would be a blast. Doing a TPF tweet up and all that good jazz. Yes, Jazz, I said that. I guess I robbed some joy out of that one for you.
it's been great. Thanks for having me on again. It's a pleasure. And race fans, we would like to hear your opinions on who's going to potentially take the checkered flag this weekend at Fontana. You know, let us know. Yeah.
Let us know. Do that Twitter. You can tweet to us at The Podium Finish. Personally, me, I'm at Rob Tiongson. Of course, let me spell that for you folks that don't know how to spell. That would be R as in Rob, O as in October, B as in boy, T as in tomato, I like icicle, O like October, N like night, G like giraffe, S like safari, O like Oreo, and N like... no. Yeah. There you go, folks.
That was amazing.
Please don't remind me to do that again.
No, I'm not.
Oh, I bet you can't come up with a song like that for your Twitter handle, because if you tried, this would be the entire podcast.
Yo, just look me up on Twitter, JAZ653086. I know it's weird, it's unique, but that's how we roll around here at The Podium Finish. So,
yeah, we're like the outlaws of the media center. So if you see us, you better hide.
No, yeah, don't. I'll be in the Charizard onesie. I'm sure they like that.
I'm sure they really would, and I'm sure you would not get any eye rolls whatsoever.
No, professionalism is what we're pro at. So
yeah, totally. We're just like a certain sponsor for the Xfinity Series opener, beef. It's what's for dinner.
Yes.
So get your pizza roll on, get your chicken nuggets, your Bell and Evans, do whatever it takes, folks. But for now, we're going to have to call it a show. And I'm not going to sing the Blues Clues farewell song. That's for another time, for another place. And if you listen to the show to be named later on WSBU 88.3 FM, every week I'm going to end the show with a really cool song that will make you either laugh, smile, or go, oh. But either way, that's a little spoiler or promotion for my show. And yeah, check it out. Check it out. So anyways, we're about out of time on this podcast because we're being kicked out by the imaginary forces called time. But thank you all for joining me and Jazz for this latest edition of TPF Live. For Jazz Sharp and Brianna O'Leary, this is Rob Tiongson. And as I always say, let's go get that checkered flag. And until next time, so long, everyone.